This is Not Quite Dead,
a Gal Pal horror movie discussion podcast.
We do deep dives on our favorite scary movies.
But sometimes we really just like to keep it shallow.
I'm your host, Kate.
I'm Megan.
Get ready for all the spoilers. Has everyone seen this movie before?
I had.
Oh yeah, like a bunch of times.
Same.
This was only my second time.
Second time.
Whoa. See,
I've seen this movie, I want to say like a dozen times at least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I have a bunch of like British friends now who are like, haven't you seen Shaun of the Dead? Don't you have it memorized because it's a zombie movie? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, actually, no, I saw it a long time ago and I don't remember what happened. So it was nice to rewatch it.
Yeah, it's great. I love all of the Edgar Wright movies. They call it the Cornetto trilogy, which has got Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, End of the World. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the other two. I haven't seen Hot Fuzz or The World's End. Yeah, but I bought them all because I was like, $25, that's a pretty good deal. I'll take it. I'm sure I'll enjoy it.
Hot Fuzz is great.
I'm so out of the loop on this one. That's what I heard.
I guess I'll ask Kate then, which of the three is your favorite since you haven't seen them all yet, Megan?
Or
let's say you had to put them in order, like 1, 2, 3.
You know, probably release order. Shaun, then Hot Fuzz, then The World's End. Yeah. For sure. What about you?
I would fully agree with that. Yeah. I don't think you can beat Shaun of the Dead, but The World's End was kind of, I mean, it was fine. I'm sure people will hate me for saying that, but.
So it just gets worse from here.
Megan's never going to watch them now.
She's going to try to get a refund tomorrow.
See, I really, really love Edgar Wright movies, and he's one of those directors that I never think of, though. It's just when I'm like going through his like catalog of movies, then I go, oh, that's right. That was Edgar Wright. And that was Edgar Wright. And that was Edgar Wright. And I like them all. Like Scott Pilgrim is like one of my like top five movies. I absolutely love it.
Is that the one with Michael Cera?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't like that one.
It's so stylized. It's hyper like stylized, which is really cool. For me.
It's very comic booky, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie is also really comic booky. I feel like I'm watching them recreate shots from a comic book.
Yeah.
But it actually was adapted afterwards into a comic book.
I loved that these guys, Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, had worked together on a TV show. I think it's called Spaced. I haven't actually seen it before, but they had an episode that one of the like plots was about a dreamt or like hallucinated zombie apocalypse, and they had such a good time making that episode that they wrote this movie together.
You should absolutely watch that show.
Yeah,
we rented a cabin once in Yosemite, and they had like all these deep random DVDs in the cabin, and one of them was the box set of Spaced, and we're like, what the hell is this? Never heard of it. Looked at it, was like, oh, we know these people. This might be cool. Watch the whole thing all the way through. It was just great. So definitely watch it.
Guys, you may not recognize that dusky voice that's joining us today. It's Jason. We have a special guest, Jason from Hemispheric Views, a podcast for vitality. I have that on a sticker in front of me, Jason. So I wanted to say it.
Yes.
One of the stickers you gave me.
It is a play on the Vegemite logo, but not really because I don't want to get sued.
No.
Satire, maybe? You're covered.
There you
satire.
Yeah, I think satire. We're covered under you're that good. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It is always a joy to have you back. And now I want to hear, Megan, how you would describe my voice. Can we all get an adjective?
It's like a tinkling of bells.
Okay, I'll take it.
Oh.
Did you want to describe yourself while you're at it? Or
no.
No. Okay.
I feel like I'm a nasally Aunt Griselda Megan. That's me.
That's not true at all.
No, I don't think so.
It's like doves being released into the wind.
Yay! There you go. Thanks, Kate.
You're welcome. If I get tinkling bells, you get doves. This movie, it's so funny to me because I feel like we have such a gamut of films that we cover. And so I was really shocked that this movie was considered to be like a box office smash hit when it only made $38 million in the box office.
Oh,
but yeah. I think that because it was a British production company, it was this kind of niche genre film where it was a horror movie, but not exactly horror, and not just like a straight comedy either. And it was kind of marketed as like a rom-com horror movie. They thought it was like wildly successful, that it made essentially 6x its budget.
I mean, that's a pretty good X.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Not as good as Jason X, but still pretty good.
I mean, if we're comparing.
I thought for sure this movie would be one of those that was just cult classic only, that no one would have ever heard of it. It would be super underground, like niche kind of thing. But most people have heard of it and have seen it, surprisingly.
You thought that today, or you thought that at the time you had seen it, that nobody else would see it?
At the time, it would become when I first saw it, I was like, "There's this has to be one of those when you go to like one of those weird movie stores and there's the like cult classics, it would be tucked way back there, not with the like traditional zombie movies, but
yeah,
I was wrong.
Okay.
It has a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is
that's crazy good.
Yeah, that's really good.
For a comedy and a horror.
Do you agree? Do both of you agree as what I would consider certified Rotten Tomatoes raters?
What a nice bone you threw us there, Jason. I mean, I would agree, and I don't want to speak for Kate, but I'm pretty sure she'd agree too.
I tend not to rewatch movies I don't like, and so yes, yeah, yeah, I would say that this is a well deserved 92%. It always makes me wonder the 8% of critics who didn't like it and like why they didn't like it.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, really? Like, not fresh? Are you serious? Speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, Kate and I would love to be able to officially add our voices to that score by becoming Rotten Tomatoes certified. So please, if you find it within your wonderful little hearts, go give us a rating in Apple Podcasts. We need 200. That's right. That's a lot. So head on over, give us a 5-star review because we're a 5-star podcast, and help us get that much closer to becoming Rotten Tomatoes certified. And then we'll stop bothering you with this request at the beginning of every episode.
It's easy. I've done it. You can do it too.
There's actually some actors in here that I recognized, which I forgot because I, you know, have only seen it once before.
I mean, it's got like a pretty good roster of well-known British comedians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Simon Pegg, of course, as mentioned.
Yep. I think of Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright as like the new Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, or like the next gen version.
Yeah, except Edgar Wright typically like stays behind camera. I think he's got a cameo in this one, but I think that Stephen Merchant, he like will get on camera a little bit more frequently, right?
Not as often as Ricky, but yeah, sure. He'll be on camera. Yeah.
Nick Frost, I think, is a funny background story in that he wasn't an actor and had no acting experience and just had such great chemistry with Simon Pegg. And they were roommates, that Simon Pegg was like, we gotta put you in some stuff.
That's amazing. What a great connection there.
All right.
Kate, if I ever become famous, I'm definitely taking you with me.
I hope so.
You're going everywhere with me.
I'm gonna be like one of those sucker fishes attached to the sharks. Mm-hmm. Right up to the top. Who else is in this one? I gotta be honest, besides Bill Nighy, there weren't a ton of other people I recognized.
Well, Lucy Davis, mm-hmm. who's from the original Office, she plays Dawn in the UK's mm-hmm. The Office.
Okay, I never watched
it. I was like,
it.
Oh, it's her. Oh my gosh, and Kate. I actually watched that with subtitles. You know me, I don't like doing subtitles, but I had to because I could barely understand them sometimes. I'm like, what are you speaking?
Jason, are you a subtitle person?
Only if it's, well, I think there's two areas. So A, if it's a foreign film, then obviously, yes, I don't know the language, so I will do subtitles. But I feel like in the last 5 years, even there has been more movies and TV shows where you just can't understand what the hell is being said. It's not an accent. It's not.
Yeah.
It's just that they put like, we'll put the volume for the people at like 2, and then we'll just put explosions at level 1,000 around the whole time they're talking. And the only way you can understand what they're saying is by reading it, which doesn't feel like the right way to mix a film, but I'm not a film expert, so I will leave it to them. But those would be the two times.
You know, I somewhat controversially on this podcast, I do subtitles on literally everything. I just feel like it increases my comprehension of what I'm watching. Also, because like you mentioned, sound mixing is complete garbage nowadays. So it's like hard to catch. And then I also do dubs on my anime. So I'm like, all right, subs on everything, dubs on anime. Like, I just prefer it.
Dubs on anime. Wow. This is.
I know.
Oh, this is a. I'm not going to take us into a tangent, but we're going to need to talk at some point about this and really unpack
will strong opinions.
I will always choose dubs if it's available. Yeah.
Oh my.
Jason's face.
What?
Okay, but Megan will do dubs whenever available because you craft while you're watching movies. And so if you're knitting or crocheting or things like that,
or painting,
like you have to be able to listen. Which I totally get. Yeah. And like, I do that too, because I'll like paint or whatever, like while I'm watching movies. And so like, I like being able to listen to it.
I also get really distracted by the text. Like what happens is I watch the text and then I miss the movie. So I don't enjoy having subtitles on if I can avoid it. But I don't judge you, Kate. Never.
I think you should. And I can take it.
Oh. And Bill Nye, as you mentioned, Kate, is also in this. He's the stepdad.
He's amazing. I love Bill Nye. He's like this like type of bit role where he just gets to be a prick in like the 6 minutes of screen time he has is so amazing. I love it so much.
He's so good. Anytime I see him in something, I'm so happy. I just love the guy.
While I was watching this, I texted Megan to tell her that I love Bill Nye because he's like a hot skeleton. And so I have to...
What a compliment.
I have to ask both of you, who is your unconventional celebrity crush?
Oh, Jason's got to come up for air at some point.
A hot skeleton. Holy shit. That is fucking perfect. That's perfect description.
Google image search him and tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know if I want that in my search history right now, but maybe
he
after.
Is a very handsome ghoul.
He is very handsome. Yeah.
He has my favorite line in the entire movie. So he definitely has a lot going with his like limited screen time. It's his like the things he says that are great compared to screen time ratio is so high.
Yeah.
It's like he's only there when it's going to be a good one. You just know it.
What is it? What's your favorite line? I got to know.
Oh, so when he's sitting in the chair and he's in the house and he's about to get hit on the head with the cricket bat and they're talking about how he got bit and he says, "I ran it under a cold tap." Like the way he says that is just like with the accent, it's just, it's incredibly, it's the perfect line.
That is a good line.
It's just perfect.
He's so like disdainful when he says it. Like he's like, I took care of it. Why is this a problem?
Yeah. Why are we even talking about this right now?
Exactly.
I guess. So, okay. I have a very unconventional crush that I had in high school that I'll use as a backup in case this one isn't unconventional enough. But, I seriously have the hots for Ricky Gervais. Speaking of Ricky Gervais.
Wow. Okay.
I totally love Ricky Gervais. Yeah. He's so funny. Like, he is, he's my kind of guy. Yeah. And he's, I don't know, I think he's kind of cute, I guess.
And not a skeleton.
Not a hot skeleton, no. No. More like a rude teddy bear.
Yes.
I did not come prepared for this question, so I'm desperately trying to think.
Neither did I. I just have a thing for weirdos.
Oh my gosh. I mean, all of my unconventional, like, Hollywood crushes, I think, are like in the skeleton category, because it's like Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, skeleton.
Yep. It's like, I'm like, do you have weird face structure, and are you also 1,000 years old?
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So, like, just basically, your type is Skeletor, is what it is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Put him in a
cloak. Skeletor.
Put him in a cloak. Yeah, I'm there.
Oh yeah, you gotta have the cloak for sure.
Yeah. That's all right, Jason. We won't keep you on the spot. We'll circle back when it
please do. Yeah, I'm,
when it occurs to you. 20
I'm
minutes
panicking
into the
to
episode.
Think of something, and I'm not
like,
coming up with
it. No, we're gonna sit here,
just sit here
total
in silence.
Fucking silence till Jason comes up with someone weird that he
Welcome
wants
to
bang.
The first 4-hour podcast, where 3.5 hours of it is just silence.
Kate, I think it's time for a summary, and we can start diving into these characters and getting into the story.
Let's do it. This movie is centered on Sean, our titular character, and he is a total loser. He's working a dead-end job. He's got a girlfriend somehow. He's got two roommates that live in a dumpy little flat. And in his laziness, ignorance, almost misses the beginning of a zombie apocalypse because he is in a hungover, dejected, recently broken up with state. And he and his best friend, Ed, totally rally to come up with a game plan to save Sean's mom, save his ex-girlfriend, try and play the heroes, and hole up at their favorite watering hole, the Winchester Bar. And so these two buffoons get to traipse all over and fight off some zombies, try and be the heroes, and try and survive through the end of the movie.
Okay, really quickly, I want to clear the air. I like this movie. Like, it made me laugh out loud quite a bit. But the underlying premise of the movie drives me nuts. And it's this trope, I feel like, that was very popular for a short while in the early aughts, where losers become the heroes, but they're still losers.
Yeah.
Like, they don't deserve their blessings.
Their blessings.
I have a lot of weird words in my head today.
I love it. I get it. I think that there was this, like, I'm gonna blame Gen X. I know that they get left out of the conversation a lot, but I think that this is a Gen X problem, because I think it's the, like, bleed over of that, like, anti-corporate sentiment that was, like, happening in the 90s and, like, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this movie came out in 2004, so it's like that kind of post 9/11 weird early 2000s kind of attitude for a lot of stuff. But yes, I do agree. I think that they kind of take that, like, loser trope, and they're like, okay, everyone who is, like, got their shit together dies in this movie. Like, they don't make it.
Or they're the bad guy.
Or they're the bad guy, yeah.
Like, I'm thinking Jack Black played this character a lot.
Sure.
Yeah.
That guy from Office Space, Ron Livingston, is that his
Ron
name?
Ron Livingston.
Yeah, for sure. Totally.
But yeah, Sean is, you're right, like, he's a loser. It's so bad when he buys flowers for his mom. Like, he's being reminded by his stepdad to buy flowers for his mom. And then he, like, gives the flowers to his girlfriend.
He just cannot stop.
I'm like, you didn't even take the card out.
He cannot stop digging himself deeper. Like, that's the thing. Like, the first, like, third of this movie, I'm like, you deserve everything that's coming to you.
Yeah.
I do, like, I may be, like, a little bit more, like, optimistic towards it, because I feel like it is creating an environment where he's, like, happening to thrive. like in his normal like day to day, he's never going to have an opportunity to like overcome his circumstances. But when he needs to step up, he's not good. Like he's not good at stepping up, but he still at least tries. No.
I feel like it's his ineptness that makes him step up where no one else would. Because he's just like, he has this false sense of confidence where he's like, shit, I could do this. And it's like, you really can't. Yeah. But you'll fumble your way through it and probably get there in the end.
That's so true. That's like, it's that confidence where they're like watching, they're watching the news and the anchor says, you know, you have to destroy the head and brain. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, what do we have on hand? Like, let's just go try and kill the zombie in the yard.
I love when they're like throwing shit at it and they're like, we need more stuff. We need more stuff to throw. Like, you're so dumb. None of these things, like, what are they throwing? Like tennis balls or something? I don't know. Like something really flimsy. And I'm like, you're not going to hurt anything with that. Even if it was like an alive person, it wouldn't hurt that person.
It felt like, too, there was this sort of like, they're the people that play video games. And so they just sort of think they have these abilities that they definitely do not have. But it's like, we did it in the game. We could clearly go just do this outside for real. It's like, yep, that translates. Sure, go for it.
That moment with the flowers, though, when she sees the card that it's for his mom, and then instead of just owning up to it, where he's like, I was joking, lowest moment in the movie for me.
Yeah.
At that point, I like, even though I've seen it a million times, I'm always like, you got a long road to walk, buddy.
Yeah. Such a lame cover up.
I was frankly surprised he even could come up with that in that amount of time, where he actually tied together like the thing that happened the night before where she said something. And I was like, I guess good on you for coming up with something, but God, that's bad.
I think it's so funny that he works at this, it's like an appliance store. And I mean, like, on its face, like him being the like shift manager at an appliance store is like not the worst, until you see that like the people he's managing are all like 16 years old.
Okay, they're supposed to be 16 17, he's supposed to be 29. I was like, everyone in this movie looks at least 10 years older than they're claiming. They all look kind of beat, and there's so much cigarette smoking, so that's not surprising.
That scene was fantastic, though. I love the fact that he's like, when everyone else calls out sick, quote unquote, and now he, like, we've gone down enough rungs on the ladder for him to be in charge. So he's like doing the daily, you know, here we go, rah, rah speech or whatever. And it's just a bunch of 16-year-old kids. Like, we don't give a shit what you have to say, dude.
Fuck off.
And he just keeps, that one guy keeps giving him shit. He's like, all right, granddad.
On his phone the whole time.
Oh, good.
So it's also his fault that his friend Ed is living with him and his roommate, Pete. Mm-hmm. And Ed is like somehow even worse than Sean, even more of a loser.
The thing that kills me with Ed is that he's a drug dealer as his like line of work. And he's not even a good drug dealer.
He's horrible.
Like, yeah, he's such a bad drug dealer. Like, he gets that phone call where someone's like asking him if he's carrying like the smallest amount of weed, and he's like, I don't. He's like, I don't even have enough for myself. And I'm like, how are you a drug dealer? Like, that's the thing that you have, is you're dealing drugs. You need to have drugs on you.
You have one product.
Yes.
Don't use the supply.
One inventory item you have to keep track of.
And it's such like, it's a lot of like gross out, like boy humor with Ed too.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. He's like the poster child for that.
The I'm sorry fart joke is just like, I hate it. I freaking hate fart jokes so bad. Yeah. I wanted to punch him. Also, Ed, this is an important character trait about Ed. Ed says the N-word.
What
like
is
casually.
Up with that? Okay. I've seen this so
is
many times.
UK thing?
I've seen it so many times, and I forget that he has that joke, quote-unquote, line every time, and I'm always like, it was 2004. Like, that wasn't that long ago.
Right. Does it not? You guys have been to the UK. I meant to ask my UK friends about this and I totally forgot. You haven't. Mm-hmm. You guys haven't been to the. Oh, my God. OK, I just assumed since you guys were more well traveled.
I have been. And I can tell you, no, this is not. There's no excuse for this.
OK, no. I was going to say, like, does it just not have the same weight?
Megan's imagining.
Like,
I just love that, Megan, you're imagining like they're like, all walking around the UK, just like dropping like the N-word like everywhere. Oh, my God.
Like, this is the place of true freedom of speech.
But he does several times. He does several different scenes where he drops words and you're like,
yes,
it was just meant as like a pure, we're going to just throw down like the, you know, double six, just shock value word right now.
Yeah.
For no value, like it didn't change the movie at all. It just felt like it was there to make you go, oh shit, what'd they just say? Holy shit.
Yeah. It's shocking. Mm-hmm. They like,
I have some questions for the UK. You need to answer for this.
They like really make a point of trying to say that Ed is really like, like holding Sean back or like really dragging him down, like, oh, you're being immature because you're around Ed. And I don't know if I agree with that. Like, I kind of feel like it's not that, it's not Ed's fault that Sean is immature. Like, I think that it's like false to try and like put that on someone else. I think that it's like maybe encouraging that kind of behavior, but I feel like Sean has to like decide for himself that he's not going to be that person anymore. I just feel like people were putting a lot of blame on Ed for it.
Mm-hmm. It's a cop out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
although
he is problematic.
I mean, Ed is annoying.
He is. He's super annoying.
I hate Ed. Yeah.
He leaves the front door open. Like, can you imagine living with somebody who just leaves the front, like not even unlocked, but just like genuinely open? I can't even imagine.
It'd be terrible.
Do you mean zombies are going to get in when the front door is open? You don't want to do that.
One of my favorite moments in this movie is when they're watching the news and the news says that they have to like lock and secure all their doors and windows, and they immediately look to the door and there's a zombie standing right there because they never fucking lock that door. Yes. And they just like Scooby-Doo like style like scream. Kills me every time. I love it.
Yeah.
I love how they use the news throughout this show to Jeez, what am I even talking about? How they use that as like almost like a character that was like a narrator throughout.
Yeah.
And parts of it would just be, you'd be hearing random news stuff about what was going on. But there's that one scene where they just kind of really nicely cut together as he's flipping channels, but it's still telling like a coherent story. It's just such a cool, and you could easily miss it if you're just like tuning out because it's news or whatever. But it was just such a good way to be a narrator that didn't need to be in the show or in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's just really cool.
It's super cool. And these guys like really love zombie movies. And the news was like one of the ways that they fit in some homages to other horror zombie movies. One of them was at the end of the movie, they mention a leading theory is that it's was spread by infected monkeys, which is a reference to 28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the beginning of the movie, one of the news, I think it's actually on the radio when he's going over to the like bodega, like style convenience store, mentions zombie virus from space. Like they mentioned like a virus from space.
They said there was like an invasion that was happening. And
So like Night of the Living Dead, like little reference in the news too. So I like that as also like a vehicle to like kind of fit those in.
I caught a couple of little references too. They're heading over to rescue Sean's mom and they say, "We're coming to get you, Barbara." Right?
Mm.
It's a nice little nod to Night of the Living Dead. And then this one's a little more subtle. I think they're driving, if I remember correctly. And one of them says zombie, just throws the word zombie into whatever they're saying. And the other one says, "Don't say the dead word. Don't say the dead word." And it's, I took that to be like a nod to the way in a zombie movie, you never hear the word zombie. It's like the concept doesn't exist in that alternate universe where zombies themselves do exist. It's a new concept, so nobody knows what it is. So they don't use the word zombie. And so that's kind of how I took that little little line.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I mean, we've been using the word ghouls a lot this season because of that. Another really subtle one is one of the guys who calls out at work is Ash. So we get a nice little Evil Dead reference there. Yeah. And there's some really, really subtle ones. The restaurant that Sean attempts to make, he doesn't even attempt to. He says he's going to make a reservation at a nice place for their third anniversary at Full Cheese. It's a reference to an Italian horror director from the 60s and 70s, Lucio Fulci.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there's a lot. Like, I will definitely throw a link in the blog for you guys to check it out. There's a million articles out there just kind of cataloging the deep cut references in this one.
There's like the whole thread of You've Got Red on You throughout the whole thing, right? Where the ink on the shirt and everything, which early watching it this time, because now I'm watching it to like take notes, right? So it's like a different mindset. But there was always the like You've Got Red on You. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's cool, whatever. But as I'm watching it through this last time, the amount of red things that are done seemingly on purpose is massive. From everything from when the kid, so when he's walking over to the little convenience store like you talked about, there's red cars everywhere. The soccer ball that he gets kicked with is also red. When he goes into the store to grab a beverage, he grabs a blue one and then puts it back and grabs a red one instead.
Interesting.
And it's just like, it's so incredibly consistent with everything being red. I did not notice it until watching it through this time to actually take notes. But yeah, just the idea of You've Got Red on You became this kind of alternate term for like they're coming for you almost or something is what it felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you're marked.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that's super cool. In reading interviews with Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, they said that when they were writing this movie, they wrote it extremely tight. So normally when they work together, when you like write comedies, there's like room for improvisation and a lot of space for like, oh, let's like try out like these jokes or things like that. And this movie was like, no, this is the line. And this is the way that this is going to be acted. And because so many of the lines end up getting repeated throughout the movie, like You've Got Red on You or things like that, they're like, we have to maintain like the integrity of the script.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like this, like the red is a really good call out because it just feels like this whole movie is very, very intentional and like how they scripted it.
It does feel like it had to be this way. There weren't many areas where you would want to change it. I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but it feels as though it was constructed and then created, and that was sort of it.
Does Pete count as a character? Pete the roommate? He gets it pretty early.
You know, I think of Pete in the same category as the friend couple attached to Liz.
Yeah.
Kind of tertiary, like cannon fodder a little bit.
Yeah. They're all kind of the same person. They're like the antithesis to Sean and Ed, right? Because they're like, what is wrong with you? Get your life together. Like, you're kind of a loser. They point these things out, right? Like that there's a lot of loserness happening. And so they become the bad guys, right? Like, you stop rooting for them, even though they're the sensical ones who are just tired of putting up with these guys' shit. But yeah, they're all kind of the same character in a way.
I would say, I mean, Pete's pretty bad. David is probably the worst.
Absolutely the worst. Yeah, he's terrible.
Trash. He is so annoying. I love that they just like keep like getting more and more pointed about him just being in love with Liz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also he has like no good instincts. Like for being in a zombie apocalypse, like he throws the bin through the window at the Winchester. It's so maddening.
You know, there's a lot of bad decisions happening in this movie. Like Why are they going to the Winchester anyway? They were fine where they were.
I know. I don't know why they're going to the Winchester. And this is like a character flaw with Sean, right? Is that like even before the zombie apocalypse, his like default third place was the Winchester.
Right.
And in the apocalypse, he's like, oh, it's fortified. It's strong. And it's like, is it? Or is it just a bar?
It's all glass windows.
Right?
Yeah. But yeah, then it was so strange to me that David throws something through the window. Like, you realize they're going to get in, right? Like, that was such an odd choice to me in this movie. Even though the zombies are very slow and dumb, which we'll get to, I was like, why would you break down your first line of defense?
It is just one of those, like, oh, everyone's irrational under pressure, like, kind of moments. Yeah. As much as you'd like to believe that you aren't, like, you're going to panic and do something stupid.
I feel like David, he feels that everything he's about to do has a percentage chance that that's going to be the thing that makes him, like, top dog. Mm-hmm. So he's just going to go for it. And if he just happens to luck out and that's like the one thing that works out and he becomes the one of the group or whatever, it's all good. But he has no acknowledgement of like, what if it doesn't though? What are the downsides of these terrible decisions?
Well, oh my God. Yeah, he drives me crazy. I do have a question for you guys though.
Mm. Oh.
Is there a restaurant or a retail spot that you would choose to try and camp out in during a zombie apocalypse?
Like if I had to?
If you had, like, let's say you had to. Let's say your house is not sustainable. You got to go somewhere. Where are you going?
I mean, okay, I'll take this first because I'm like, I would just want to ride it out because this place is great. But a key in Campbell?
Yeah, you could have just swirls like all day long. Hell
just,
yeah.
Just like kill myself over drinking too many swirls.
Definitely.
It would at least be fun.
It would be.
Right.
And their quesadillas are amazing. So
I love their quesadillas. Yeah. We go every Wednesday. That's like our date night thing. I always get a quesadilla because I'm a child, I guess. I don't know. It's, I just, I love their
quesadillas. No, they're good. You don't even.
They're great.
Don't. This is nothing on you. They're just really good.
They're good. And that's what I would do. Mm. I would just feast on like Calimex food and have swirls until I couldn't anymore.
I love it.
And the zombies broke through the glass.
I would have to pick. This is so lame. I live like 200 feet away from a grocery store.
We all live in different places.
We all live in very different places. This is true. But I live like within walking distance of like a little, like, it's not a full size grocery store. It's like a corner grocery store. But it has one entrance at the front and it's got like a vestibule like entrance before you go in. And it's got food. So yeah, like I think that seems pretty reasonable. But also, yeah, I would try and stay in my house literally as long as possible. I have a basement in my house. I feel like I could stay in this house for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you have that nice liquor store right across the street. You should stay
there. That's true. Yeah, that's true. I'll just bounce.
Could live on olives. Yeah.
That's sustainment and also weaponry. Like that's both. So that's a good.
Yes.
Like the Molotovs.
The weapon thing, right? Yeah. Another fun piece of trivia about this movie is that when Edgar Wright was writing it, he said that one thing that he really wanted to differ from the George Romero movies was that in the UK, there's just not as many guns.
Right.
And so this movie has one gun
in the Winchester.
In a spot that would make sense to a British audience, which is a historical mounted gun that people aren't even sure if it works.
Right.
Yeah.
I found that so funny.
Me too.
Actually, I was like, okay, right. This is the UK. There's no guns. There's one place with a gun and it's a decoration. Of course, that's where they're going to go.
So good.
Yeah.
I would pick IKEA.
Oh,
it's so big.
Unlimited things to build, structures to block, weaponry. It's got
meatballs.
It's got everything.
Endless meatballs.
And I don't really feel like zombies would be good at escalators, probably. No. So that would be pretty easy to kind of get them like downstairs.
That's a really good point. I feel like,
and most non-zombies can barely get out of an IKEA. So like a zombie doesn't really seem like it would stand a chance.
That's true. I was worried for you at first because I was like, oh, I feel like you'd have so many areas you need to blockade off. But yeah, it's a maze. Like it's truly a maze. Right. Like as long as you're not dealing with intelligent zombies, I think you'd be okay.
These Shaun of the Dead zombies, I think, would be good.
Pretty dumb.
Against, an IKEA.
Zombies versus an IKEA. That, I mean, that's very like Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead.
I love that, yeah.
It's like the new mall is just like an IKEA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about the zombies. Are we there yet?
I think so. I'm ready.
I'm ready too. I mean, these zombies are so interesting because they're pretty like slow and shambling, but they do have that really nice concept that they retain some little bit of who they were before. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we see that at the very end, right? When Ed gets it and he becomes a zombie, but he wants to eat Sean, but he'll still play video games. Like he can still participate in the friendship, which I think is very cute. It's a very cute way to end this, even though I don't necessarily like the Sean character or Ed character.
Yeah.
It's a nice bow.
Okay, but it is like so, it's so accurate. It's so like late stage capitalism that of course within 6 months of them figuring out the zombie apocalypse, we would have reality shows with zombies.
Yeah, of course.
Like we definitely would.
And like multiple, like just you can't, that's all that's on now.
Pretty classic, kill them by removing their head or destroying their brain.
And they told us twice. They told us twice on the news to just to repeat this fact. And it's like, okay, we got it. Cool.
They're very bitey. It seems like that's the only way, at least shown to us, that the virus transfers is by biting.
I think everyone was bit, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I think so. Mm-hmm.
They're pretty aggressive. Like, but they're aggressive like when they are alerted by like sound or noise. They're not just like seeking like to try and bite someone. They're kind of like idling until they're like roused into action.
Yeah, like they're in sleep mode.
Yep.
But you know, they're aggressive, but Sean literally jumps into a crowd of zombies and just runs through them and they do nothing to him. Like he's fine. He doesn't even get scratched.
These are the zombies I want to deal with.
Yeah.
These are like level one, level zero starter zombies. This is what I would be into. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the ones that are like full on sprinting at you. I don't.
Those are terrible. I am really curious about these zombies' intelligence level because they are able to be tricked. We've seen zombies being tricked. We've seen zombies being tricked in Walking Dead. I think the group covers themselves in zombie guts. And so it's like a smell thing, which makes sense to me. But here it's like, well, it's a different type of tricking, right? They're behaving like zombies. So what does that mean as far as intelligence goes, right, for these zombies? If they're It kind of takes a little bit of intelligence to be tricked, right? Like you're not just running on instinct. You have to consider what you're seeing and say, oh, that doesn't match what I expect a living thing to do that I want to eat. So I'm going to ignore it.
It's, oh man, I don't remember which one it was. There was a movie that we watched for this season that the zombies were really oriented around like, it seemed like they could smell, like they could smell a living person. And so this one, there's none of that instinctual, like, like scent of a living person or like hearing them. It is very like, they're able to be tricked, which is such a good question. I mean, you can trick,
visual?
You can trick dogs. Like you can
dogs
like,
are
you can
smart.
Like you can pretend to throw a ball and a dog will go after it.
But dogs can't look up.
I feel like when I was in like high school, that was like a joke that people would like make. Like, remember, like before the internet was like so ubiquitous that like people's memes were just like movie quotes. Like, I feel like that was like one that, that was like really common in my high school. But yeah, it's a good question. I don't think this movie is interested in answering that question.
Nah, no. I'm just posing it. I mean, I wasn't expecting an answer. Kind of like one of those things that comes up where it's like you can tell they didn't think this through. Because if the zombies were smart, they'd find ways into this restaurant.
Right.
Why do so many zombies have broken ankles? Is a question I have. Like, that's such a thing where there's always the one ankle that's like twisted 180 degrees and they're dragging it behind that. What is happening to these people where these ankles are being broken so easily? I don't understand.
Dude, I would be that zombie. That would 100% be me. I would probably, in my absolute terror, running away from a zombie.
That's what I was going to say.
Fall and break my ankle and then get bitten by a zombie. And like, that's like, that's like what would happen.
So it's an escape injury and then you become, okay, got it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking, but that's still a lot of specifically broken ankles that you're referring to, which you're right. There are quite a few.
Just seems like there's a lot of broken ankle zombies out there.
It's so effective though. I mean, you see them kind of like dragging their one and you're like, classic zombie. You see it and you're like, it's a zombie.
The zombies also have white eyes, which is
really
kind of a classic. Really? Yeah. Dead thing.
Very gray, kind of like in varying states of decomp, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
I like these zombies. They seem beatable, which is important.
Yeah, not scary though. We've definitely seen some zombies that are like frankly terrifying. These ones are so manageable.
And that kind of takes us to our next point, which is this is, you know, it's a horror podcast. It's a horror adjacent movie, but it's really a comedy. It's really not a scary movie. And so we wanted to take a little. And so we wanted to talk through some of the things that we thought were funny in this movie. Some good ones to pull out for the audience.
Okay. This is maybe not like strictly funny, but I find it hilarious. Given the context of the show.
All right.
David getting absolutely annihilated by zombies was so good. It's like so funny because there's no like, there's not a lot of gore or like gruesomeness in this movie for it being a horror movie. And then you have this character that he's so annoying and he's so pretentious and like condescending and just awful to be around. And he's the one character that we like watch get gutted and ripped literally from limb to limb.
Limb to limb. His limbs being pulled apart. It's so good. I wrote that down too.
Funny.
And then she uses the leg like as a weapon.
It's so deserved. It's like a very like deserved funny death because they don't. I think because it's the only death in the movie like that, it's so, it's so effective. It's really good.
Isn't he pulled through the window that he in fact smashed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he fucking deserved it.
It's
such
a
guy.
Good karmic victory.
Yeah.
For the zombies, I guess.
That also felt like a nod to Night of the Living Dead because that's how the zombies kind of like come in, right? And like pull people through the wall. Yeah. It kind of felt like that a little bit, but much, much more fun to watch.
I feel like the only other like gruesome one was the very first death of the grocery store lady that was in the backyard. They're like, there's a woman in the backyard. And he's like, what? And they go and look and she's just back there like zombieing it up.
He's like, there's a girl in the garden.
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah.
And then she turns around and kind of comes after him. And he's like, I'm going to use physical force, like announcing it out loud to like somehow make it okay. And then shoves her and she falls on the like, I think it was like an umbrella like holder thing. And then she gets up and they do that cool like you can see through her and see Sean like through the hole of her body.
Really good. That's really good.
Which felt like super advanced for back then. I don't know.
I know. That like a comedy moment though of them debating which vinyls to throw at her is like gold.
Yeah.
So good.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And it's nice because the zombies are slow, so they have plenty of time to like do this bit and let it run its course.
Yeah.
Naturally, yeah. I love when the zombie finally attacks Sean in the very beginning, and Ed is like, hold on, let me get pictures. Like,
two seconds.
He's like, what are you doing? Get it off of me. It's like such a classic like dude thing. Oh, the other thing that I really enjoyed in this movie, it was small and fleeting, but there's that neighbor of Sean's who is, it's this woman, and she's kind of like got her own friend group, but they're a mirror image of Sean's group.
So good.
It's so funny. And they like touch base at the beginning, and she's like, hey, how are you? And he's like, I'm fine, but he's really not. And she's like, okay. And they like go on, and then they see each other later, and she's got like this group of mercenary friends, right, who end up like blasting all the zombies with the army. And he's just got a bunch of like misfits hanging out at the Winchester. I kind of enjoyed that little mirroring they did.
They did such a good job of getting people that were not identical, but like comically identical, to where it was obvious that they were meant to be each other, but they were enough different that it wasn't like identical twins or something. It was so funny.
Such good vibe matching. The dialogue in this movie is so funny. There's so many lines in this that I feel like I could have written down. One of my favorite exchanges is when Sean is on the phone with his mom, and he's like so worried because she says that someone tried to break in and was very bitey. And even Ed is like, oh God, is Barbara okay? And he's like, oh no, we just might have to kill my stepdad. And Ed's like, oh, okay. Like they're just so, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Just Simon. Oh, and like when he's talking to his mom and he's like, you know, we need to leave. Like Simon's been bit and he's now like a problem for this group, but he doesn't know how to tell his mom this. And he's like, Simon touched me. And she turns around and she's like, okay. And he's like, I made that up. Immediately.
He's such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Such a him thing to say. Like, what's the worst fucking thing I could say right now that's not true? I'm just going to go for that. With the friend group thing too, I love how they continuously, they always ask people, like, they would always ask each other how they're doing, and they'd always say, surviving. Yeah. And it was just like all those little tiny pieces just fit so friggin' well.
Yeah, the script has like so much like mirroring in it, where it's like half of the lines like from the first half of the movie just get repeated in like a new context at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Or they become like they turn into real things, right? Like there's what did he say? He said like, I think it was Ed said something like, next time I see him, he's dead.
Yes.
Speaking about Pete. And it's like the next time we saw him, he was dead.
Literally dead.
Or like Pete said something about like, go to the shed, or like, what did he say? Ah, shit. Did I write it down? Oh, go live in the shed, you thick fuck. And then like end of the movie, he's literally living in the shed now.
Yeah.
So it was just like so cool to see like lines become reality later.
Kind of along that line, when they're in the Winchester, they accidentally turn on the jukebox, right? And it's Queen, and it's Don't Stop Me Now, and they go kill the Queen, which is sort of like a play on God Save the Queen, but it's Queen the I love little like these little second meanings happening all over the place, these little puns. It's very, feels very British.
Beating up zombies like in tune with music is quite fun.
Yeah,
as well.
So funny. Such a nice sequence.
Yeah.
I had to laugh because of how like poorly this type of stuff has aged, but like, what was it, Ed, anytime Ed would say like gay, right, like they were having like a nice moment and Ed just goes gay, and I'm like, hey, I remember that joke.
Ed is like, at least they keep it to like one character, like Ed,
yeah, like it's clearly not condoned. It's like, this guy is an asshole. That's why he's saying these things.
Yes. It's like everyone, including the audience, is kind of rolling their eyes when he's doing this. Because it's like, oh, he's
like,
dropping N-bombs.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, saying like gay jokes or like your mom jokes. Yeah. Like he's kind of like hitting all of those beats that's like, yeah, I think we all knew a guy or two who was like doing that around that time.
Or two, like or like all.
Literally all like, of them, yeah.
Like this such guy a, like, clearly perfect did not grow up.
Capture of a time period of a, yes. of a yeah, not.
Yeah.
This moment is so small and like it's maybe it's very funny, so like hopefully you guys find it funny too, but it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I just like walked onto this and find it hilarious, is when Sean is in his hungover morning not realizing that the apocalypse has started. He's making his way to the convenience store, and when he like grabs his drink and then goes to walk back to the register, he like slips on something, and it's like implied that he like slips in blood or something. Yeah. And he just like doesn't know. Kills me every time. I love it.
There was so two funny. Giant bloody handprints like on yeah. the drink thing.
he doesn't even notice.
Like yeah. what? Come on.
I feel like, that's something I would do. I feel like I would slip in blood and like and just be like, oh my god, I'm so clumsy, and like what just a mess. Like, keep going.
That was another scene where I feel like. Up. They did a thing because they said like, oh, everything's going to be different now. And he grabs a normal Coke and then puts it back and grabs a Diet Coke. Like, it's just like yet another place where they're stringing along things that are meant to happen.
Yeah.
There's so many little things like that in this movie.
I love him walking past like a zombie on the street and he's like, sorry, I don't have any change. Like, just think the zombie's a bum.
And his ankle is also twisted.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh my god. Who was talking? I think Sean was talking to his mom about Liz, and she was talking about like what they were gonna make to eat, and she said something like, these days, you know, most people don't eat meat anymore, like after we had already kind of moved into the people getting bit thing, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so clever. It's like a mousetrap of a movie. Like, yes. Yeah, just like all these like little traps, like funny little traps that we're just like waiting to set off. In the script
is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fun. I feel like Edgar Wright, I mean, Hot Fuzz. Megan, I feel like you would really enjoy Hot Fuzz. Because
everyone says I would.
That like stylistically is very similar to this one in terms of the like setting up things early on that pay off later. Like 100% Hot Fuzz.
Definitely.
Yeah. Baby Driver is a little bit less like stylistically intense in some ways. You might like that one too. That one's a little bit more recent of his. Yeah.
He did Baby Driver?
He did. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Also good.
I think he was involved in Ant-Man too. He's done a lot of stuff. He's like all over. Yeah.
What about the dart in the head? Did that bother anyone? So they're in the pub at the end of the movie. He's fighting off a zombie. I'm forgetting her name now, but David's girlfriend is throwing darts. She throws one, misses, throws one, hits the zombie, and he says, yeah, keep going. Then she throws another one, and it hits him in the directly side of the head, like all the way in. And that, it's one of those things you see, you just feel internally. And then he rips it out, and then like blood just spurts out.
Yeah, fun little spurt coming out.
It's like the most comical blood spurt ever. It's, so bad.
It was gross. Yeah, like how deep would a dart go into your skull?
It feels like that would be really bad.
If you were like throwing it like hard enough to try and like hit a zombie, like awful. Didn't hit me as viscerally as you though, I think.
Yeah, gross. I did enjoy like the CGI blood.
Yeah.
Spurt. I thought they had a good use of CGI in this movie. Like, you could tell they were using it to keep costs down, but it wasn't overused so that it was so obviously like cheap, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I only noticed it really twice. Right. It was the one with the blood spurt from the dart, and then the seeing through the girl thing was like obviously that, but
Yeah.
Everything else felt pretty practical for the most part. You could tell when they were hitting people that they were like very much not contacting anyone. And it was like angles were used in a good way. But it still felt, you know, good enough.
Yeah, they did a good job with it.
This being a comedy, too, I think gives you a lot of leeway. Because there was so much where like, oh, they're using a pool cue to beat a zombie, like, in Time to Queen. Like, it's just funny. Like, it's like,
it's great.
They're just kind of throwing any kind of realism out the window for a moment. And that really helps their cause.
And running over multiple zombies into the windshield, and the windshield never broke. Like, it was always just fine.
Oh, like, I had I have a question, because I haven't seen all of the George Romero movies. Is the car that Simon had, the stepdad, that Jaguar, is that like an important car in like George Romero movies? They were just making such a big deal about this car that I was wondering if it was a reference to something.
I just assumed it was because back at that point, a Jag was like uber posh compared to everything else. So I just, that's what I took it, but it might be, could be.
Yeah, I could totally see that too. I think that I got into this like conspiracy theorist mode where I was like, everything's connected to something else.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that must be a reference to a movie I haven't seen. Like there were a lot of things like that where I was like, oh, I just haven't seen Dawn of the Dead. And so that's why I'm not getting it.
Now I just want to go one of those like Q&A panels where they're up there and be like, excuse me, what was the Jagged reference to in another movie?
That would 100% be me. In this season of Zombies, we have three special episodes with three special guests. And in these episodes, we are doing a very special segment that we're calling Star Swap.
Star Swap.
Star Swap.
We are taking a thematic element from the movie that we're watching and matching it to a similar movie and asking what would happen if we swapped the leads of these movies. What would happen? And so in Shaun of the Dead, we have very much a buddy comedy dynamic between Shaun and Ed. And we wonder, what would happen if you swapped these two leads with the leads from Superbad? If we put Seth and Evan into this zombie apocalypse, how do you think they would fare, guys?
And also the vice versa of it all.
I do think that if you put Sean and Ed into a high school scenario where they needed to get beer to impress some girls, I feel like they could pull it off.
It would be like a 12-minute movie, and it would just be everyone drinking beer at the end. It would be fine.
Oh, yeah. Not a problem.
I figured there'd be no difference. Like, Superbad would remain unchanged, just with two different leads.
Yes, definitely.
But this movie, I mean, I don't think they'd, well, let's see. Are they still in high school if they're in this movie?
Yep. Same characters, just dropped in.
Yep.
I think they would actually be throwing a party at their place, but it's like end of the world party, or like stay safe from the zombie, whatever they want to call it, right? And then the adventure would still be them collecting beer, but with zombies around. But like all their friends come to their place and have like a party at their parents' house or whatever it is in this story. So that's how I feel like the story would translate in this movie.
See, I think that the story would actually like maintain the element, because these two teens, Seth and Evan, were just like total horn dogs. They're like, we're gonna get chicks. And so they would be like, just like Sean, where they're like, we're gonna be the heroes and we're gonna save the girls. But they would just totally boff it. Like, they would not make it. They would really struggle with these zombies.
This would not be good at all. This would be a horrible situation. I think both Seth and Evan in a world with zombies, as you already mentioned, they are complete horn dogs and all they care about is hooking up. And I think they would continue to do that in a zombie world, and it would really not go very well for either of them. Yeah, not good. They were really bad in Superbad, and I think they would be worse in a zombie world.
Wow, I'm surprised I have more faith in them than both of you.
I just think that they're really short-sighted and super bad. They're so like, what's the immediate thing in front of me? And like, that's what I'm going to focus on. And they would just like, they would just run into a scenario where they'd be like, oh, and this place is also full of zombies and now we're all bit by zombies.
With the given prompt of there's a girl in the garden, the first move for them would not be to push away. I'll just say that.
Yeah. That's very true. Yeah, this would be like a 12 minute movie.
Maybe.
12 minutes, you're giving them quite a bit of credit. Yeah.
Maybe they would still throw their party, but like, yes, everyone turns into a zombie, but they'd have like a zombie party. It would end with like them all just being zombies, but still having their party. Like, I can see that being a thing.
Can the two cops from Superbad be in there as well?
I know, right?
Can we add that?
Oh, the cops are like one of the best parts of Superbad. I love like Bill Hader so much.
Also, talk about a movie that's like a complete product of that time. My God. I just watched you both mentioned it and I had seen it. I had to watch it again because I didn't really remember. Wow, what a slice in time that movie is.
We were talking about, you know, Ed, you know, dropping gay jokes, your mom jokes. That's like Superbad, like wall to wall. Like that's that whole movie.
Wow. Yeah. I love that era of Jonah Hill.
It was around the same time, right? 2000 something.
Yeah. So this one came out in 2004. Superbad came out in 2007. So, so yeah, 2000s. Yeah, 2000s.
Everything from early 2000s feels like a lifetime ago.
I know.
I mean, this movie came out 20 years ago.
Oh. 20 years, guys.
Yeah. It's real. We
could have had a whole 20-year high school reunion.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. All those teens who are working at that appliance store are probably, you know, have kids now.
Still and, working at the appliance store.
Still working at the appliance store.
But with kids.
Yeah.
Their kids are working there now as well.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I got to rewatch this. I'm glad I had the excuse because it had been on my list to rewatch for a long time and I just kind of blew it off because I have a million other things to watch.
When did you last watch it, Meg? Was this like honestly, back when it came out or later?
Pretty close to when it came out.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big gap.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think I was in college still when it came out, and that's probably when I watched it. Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of the jokes went over my head, right? But I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I got a chance to rewatch it, and I'll probably watch it again because I know there's still like jokes that I'm missing. And I want to watch the rest of the movies in this trilogy from these two. Yeah.
I think you should. I think we kind of put a little bit of a wet blanket on it, I feel like, but you should watch the other ones. I think it's worth it.
This movie is so good. I would highly recommend it. I mean, I know we talked about it having some dated jokes and like the guy being a loser, but like all of that's like still really funny. Like it's
done well.
It's done super well, and like any of the kind of like off color stuff they keep to one character, so you can just kind of write that guy off as okay, he's from 2004 and he's kind of an asshole, but the rest of the movie is like so tightly scripted and just so fun and like a really 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 easy entry to zombie movies. We always talk about, you know, if you've got friends or if you yourself are a little bit squeamish, what horror movies are good to watch. This one has a few pretty brief scenes of gore, but nothing outrageous, nothing that's going to keep you up at night. It's pretty evenly tempered by how much comedy there is. So I think it's a pretty accessible zombie movie if it's not maybe your usual forte.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Jason, did Valerie watch this with you? Because I know she's not into horror.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's big fan. She loves this. This is a great movie. There's even the parts that are, you know, gross, or they're easily like look awayable for brief seconds. Like there's not like jump scares. It's not, there's not crazy murder happening. And there's so much funny that I think it just puts a nice coating over everything else to where you're like, yeah. Because even the gross parts are kind of funny, I would argue. Mm-hmm. Like the way they do it is kind of comical. Like the, you know, like we talked about the ripping out of the stomach, but then like all of a sudden they're using his legs as weapons. It's like,
it's
silly. Okay. It's like cartoonish gruesome likeness. Mm-hmm. It's not it's not intended to be like shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. Come for the comedy and hang around for the other parts, but the comedy I think is what sells this film. I have one extra question for both of you.
Ooh, yay.
Right.
The Winchester. Okay. It's the place that's the default place to go. We're always going to the Winchester. What if either of you were asked by friend, significant other, whatever, we're going to the Winchester over and over and over again? What's your reply to that? Specifically that exact place, not a place that represents the Winchester for you, but the Winchester.
Well, I'd be like, I'm going to drown because I can't swim to England. You're saying if it was like in our neighborhood.
Let's pretend like it was in downtown San Jose and also in Boulder at the same time somehow.
Oh, then I would definitely go because I'd be like, Kate will be there.
Okay, so it's a wormhole that you can both see each other through. Let's say that. Now, are we going? We're going. It sounds like we're going.
Probably go. My beef with the Winchester is they don't have real food. Like, their food is like packaged, like pretzels and stuff. Yeah. And like, I can totally get down with going to the same place like every week, as long as there's real food. Like I really struggle with the idea of like going to a bar and then having to eat pretzels and like nothing else.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as long as they have quesadillas and swirls, we're good.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. Would I go to the Winchester? Well, I certainly wouldn't go there to rely on the one gun that it has because I assume it doesn't work. And it has glass walls, which I know I said I would go to a key, but I'm like half kidding, right? Like if I'd honestly stay in my apartment. But yeah, the Winchester doesn't actually seem safe to me. It's such an odd choice. I think I don't think I would go to the Winchester unless I knew Kate was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Kate is the deciding factor. Yeah. Got it. Understood.
Yeah.
But for a weekly hang, Meg?
Yeah, no zombies, just weekly
hang. Yeah, no zombies, just a weekly hang.
Oh! Like I totally misunderstand the question.
This is a separate question. This is question two.
I'm such an idiot. Yeah, I would totally go to the Winchester. It looks great.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, if I was going to like leave work on a Friday like 4 and like go grab a pint, like, yeah, of course I'd go to the Winchester.
Yeah, it looks great.
And then
great.
I would go somewhere else for dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a dive bar that we go to after work that is the same way. It's only got drinks and like popcorn. And I'm like, I want to go to a place with food. Like Lazy Dog was better than this because it had food. But that's what we have. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Megan, you totally botched that. Guys, go give us a 5-star rating. We deserve it. We're good hosts.
Do it.
Jason, do you want to plug your podcast before we head out?
Not really, but I will.
What are you guys working on? What are you guys working on?
Yeah, we, like both of you, have crossed the 100 mark. So we're at 10-something now. So that's exciting.
Woohoo.
Yeah, it's Hemispheric Views. It's a fortnightly, or every other week if you're, you know, using normal language. It's about all kinds of things. It's got, I guess we've been labeled as tech adjacent. We're not a tech podcast, really. We talk about all kinds of stuff. It's myself, two friends from Australia, both one on each side of the country. So there you go. We've got some hemispheric views. Imagine that. It's a fun show of some friends just chatting about all kinds of shit. And we cover everything from food to friends to weird words that they use that we do not understand and vice versa. So there you go. Hemisphericviews.com.
It has been such a pleasure having Jason on this month. And make sure to tune in next month for our very exciting Korean horror drama, Train to Busan. Super excited for that one.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And thank you, Jason, again for being on our show.
Thank you both. You're the best.
This was Not Quite Dead.
Check out our other episodes wherever you listen to podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at Not Quite Dead Podcast and on Twitter at NQD_podcast.
Follow our blog for bonus content at notquitedeadpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening.
And happy watching.